This is Keith Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Herding Code. This episode is being recorded on June 23rd, 2009. We are talking today to two people, G. Andrew Duthie, who is a developer evangelist for Microsoft's Mid-Atlantic States District. He's also written several ASP.NET and web development books and spoken at lots of conferences. You may also know him as DevHammer on Twitter. And we're also talking to Alan Stevens, who's a developer, C-sharp MVP, ASP Insider, and does a lot of open space facilitation. You may have seen Alan around various conferences. So this conversation sort of came out of a discussion that you two had on Twitter about the podcast and sort of its level of snarkiness or honesty, depending on your perspective. And so we wanted to have you guys on to kind of talk about some of those issues, and our goal here is not to get like totally meta and just do a podcast about podcasting or a podcast about Herding Code, but it seemed like there was some interesting stuff that came out of that conversation. So I'll throw it to you guys first and see if there's anything you wanted to kind of get started with.
Well, I'm glad to be on, and I appreciate you all giving us the opportunity to chat with you. I think Alan's probably in some ways the more passionate about certain subjects, so I'm going to let him jump in and see what he gives me to respond to.
I'll always have a response for you, Andrew. So I think what spawned this was you made a comment about one of the Herding Code episodes and the level of snarkiness, and I responded that I really like Herding Code because these four guys are all doing real software development every day. And so I started making snarky comments at you about real developers versus people inside the Microsoft bubble. And I think we kind of took the conversation from there.
Right. And I think that was, I mean, you know, one of the things that's, of course, always challenging about Twitter is, you know, 140 characters doesn't always make for great debate. But I think that you made some good points in that, you know, one of the things that I really like about Herding Code, you know, snarkiness aside, and I think I probably was a little over the top in my complaints about that, so I hope the guys will forgive me. But, you know, I do like the stories from the trenches, and I think that that's an important thing. And, you know, one, I think some of my favorite episodes have come about with the sort of horror stories of bad things that you guys have done in the past. So I think that perspective is really important. I think sometimes what I'd like to see a little more of, and I think it's really hard to be unbiased from the inside of Microsoft, is, you know, maybe just a little more sort of credit given for people who are actually trying to do the right thing. Sometimes I feel like there's an assumption, and I don't think it's just necessarily among, you know, the Herding Code guys or, you know, any particular group, but I think that as a general rule, there's a tendency to sort of assume the worst when something comes out. And sometimes, you know, sometimes we do things that we really deserve to be criticized for, no doubt about it. Sometimes I think people are just trying to do the right thing and sometimes just missing the boat, even though they're trying to do the right thing, you know, whether it's, you know, demos that are, you know, drag and drop. And I know that that's a particular pet peeve of Alan's, you know, not to make this a complete drag and drop purse fight or anything, but, you know, I think what's, you know, one of the things that I see as a challenge for us internally is we aren't doing day-in, day-out development, right? We are not the guys in the trenches, that myself and my fellow evangelists, but we're doing the best that we can to bring at least our experience and our knowledge to what is ultimately a role that's about demonstrating products, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you guys, Microsoft as a whole, at least from the dev perspective, is about building tools for me to use. And, I mean, to be quite honest, I've nursed at the Microsoft teat now for over a decade, and I'm quite happy with my relationship with Microsoft. But as tool builders, you guys aren't tool users day in and day out, and I feel like it's my role, especially as an MVP with the C-sharp team, to give real-world feedback. That's going to sound very different than what you're going to hear from your normal customers. and from, you know, people that just love Microsoft. I love Microsoft. In fact, Microsoft makes some great stuff, but things that aren't great, you're going to hear about it from me pretty unvarnished. And I am going to throw in some snark. I am going to throw in some sarcasm, especially when I'm talking to someone like you, who I know, we get along, and even when we disagree, we're not mad at each other. It's actually a fun conversation. What I learned from this debate we had on Twitter that ended up in this podcast is that from the outside, it looked like we were viciously duking it out.
Yeah, I think people were selling popcorn at one point.
Right. Yes, I recall that.
So I'm going to disagree with Alan a little bit here.
Well, you're wrong.
Well, that's fine. I have the right to be wrong. In fact, I use that right often. So it's not... It's hard to paint DevDiv with a huge brush because they are tool users. I mean, so if you talk to Brad Wilson and some of the other ASP.NET devs, they're using the latest, like, Visual Studio 2010 builds to build, you know, ASP.NET 4 and, you know, MVC and everything like that. And I know that the Visual Studio guys are dogfooding. They're using Visual Studio to build Visual Studio. And they live that pain. In fact, they live more pain than we will ever live. Because, you know, they're waiting for the next build so that they can continue to work on their feature because their feature is currently broken. So, you know, they're living more pain than we will ever live in terms of Visual Studio. But there are some other areas in DevDiv and Entity Framework where they're a little more out of touch and they don't have a practical use. And all of the little app building days in the world aren't going to help them, you know, integrate with a legacy database. That they're still kind of building in a bubble. But I think it is important to note that what Andrew says is true, that they're, you know, they are trying to demonstrate a product, but there are, at least within DevDiv, there are people that are living the life. They may not be building the same kind of apps that we are, they're building different apps. I think their experience would be a little more analogous to the people at like DevExpress or JetBrains, where they're building tools to build tools. And so they live a different kind of pain than we do. And so they do need our feedback to kind of find out, you know, where they're missing the boat in terms of, quote unquote, real world development.
Yeah, and I think that that's, I mean, I think that that's a great point in that we absolutely need the feedback. We need the candid feedback. We need the candor. No question about it, right? That's not really where I was... If I had a gripe at all, it wasn't with that. I think that the feedback is really critical. I think the other thing that you highlight that I think is important for people to understand about Microsoft is not only are there multiple groups within DevDiv who are working on different things, have different priorities, have different styles, but DevDiv isn't the only group within Microsoft. I mean, the group that I work with, Developer and Platform Evangelism, really is all about helping developers get ready for whatever the next, you know, stuff that's coming out is. You know, so we're always sort of a forward-looking group. So, you know, we're in the Silverlight 3 mode and Visual Studio 2010 and .NET 4.0 and really trying to figure out ways to bring content to user groups, you know, bring, you know, events like code camps, support things like that and help the developer community in that way. But one practical aspect of that in terms of the organization I work in is that we aren't the people who are doing day-to-day development work like the folks within DevDiv are doing. So myself and some of my peers, a lot of what we try to do is come up with, you know, might call them either hobby or sideline projects so that we actually do have some hands-on coding that we're doing on a regular basis, because otherwise all we would end up doing is writing pretty much straight demo code, which makes it hard to do the kinds of, you know, best practices or stories from the trenches that I think you guys do really well. And it's something that I definitely see as a challenge to the role, you know, the developer evangelist role that, you know, that needs to be addressed by each individual evangelist.
You know, we were talking 2 weeks ago with Damien Gard and the subject of App Week came up, you know, the idea of like product groups taking a week or so to actually build applications. And so I think that's a great idea. I think that could even extend further. Like, I know some developers, especially at some other companies, Google, you know, with the famous 20% time and that kind of thing, encourage like open source participation or that kind of thing. And I think that's something where, you know, is another way like to get, you know, this real world development. Like, for instance, I've used Tim Heuer's Silverlight 2 media player or video player, and I think that's a great example of like actually seeing how well Silverlight's working in the real world, because you're actually building with it and people are using it and that kind of thing. Is that kind of thing encouraged enough, you think? Because it just, I think that a lot of these app week type things, you it's too easy to do a drag and drop if you're building a week long project and you're not really staying with it long enough to hit the pain points.
So I think the answer to that, at least on my team, is, you know, my manager's been pretty clear with the whole team that that's definitely encouraged, but it's not something that is, you know, it's something that's considered sort of, it's a stretch thing. It's not mandated per se. It's, you know, you need to, as an evangelist, keep your skills up to snuff. How you choose to do that is really up to you. So there's a lot of freedom. I mean, one of the great things about this role is there's a lot of freedom in terms of how you make the role your own and how you achieve the ends that, you know, that we're supposed to achieve. I've been working on a project. I don't know if any of you have had a chance to look at it, but I've been working on a project called Community Megaphone for probably about, I guess, about a year and a half, maybe 2 years. That actually grew out of, you know, way back when we were first sort of starting to see code camps pop up in the community. A lot of folks didn't have their own code camp website. People were struggling to try and figure out when's the next code camp coming up. So I popped a site up for Mid-Atlantic code camps, and, you know, to the point of you know, good bad architecture kind of thing, I just basically grabbed one of the ASP.NET starter kits and ended up doing some stuff really in a bad way, where I was hard coding things and had to open Visual Studio every time I wanted to change a date, which was a little ridiculous. And it just kind of got out of date, and I decided that I wanted to just completely replace it, rebuild it from the ground up, and ended up building out a promotion engine for developer and IT pro events, and kind of started out small in Mid-Atlantic, grew it out to all the East Coast, and now it's nationwide. You know, and I did that in part because it was something that I felt that the community could really use, that it was something that could benefit the community. But a big reason for doing that was because it gave me the opportunity to really keep my skills fresh, to bring in new technologies. At the time, one of the things I really wanted to get my hands dirty with was mapping. So I did a lot of stuff with the Virtual Earth JavaScript API. Then more recently, I've started adding in some jQuery functionality because I'm really, you know, kind of jazzed about what jQuery allows in terms of making the UI a little more snappy. But it's also a learning experience from the standpoint of, you know, I'm not, I wouldn't describe myself as a deep patterns guy. And so there's definitely some stuff now that MVC is out, and, you know, there's a lot of things that I would probably choose to do differently if I had to start from scratch again. So, you know, you find that kind of retrofitting certain things gets to be more painful the more kind of cruft you get in the code. But overall, you know, it's great to have that hands-on experience and to be able to spend some time coding on a regular basis, where you're writing more than just hello world and you're actually writing something that real people are using every day. I think it makes a big difference.
So we've kind of talked about different ways that Microsoft doesn't get it. Not, and that sounds harsh. It's not that they don't get it. It's that they don't. They have different goals as far as individual employees than, you know, us that are not in Microsoft or at Google or at Yahoo or Apple. But what we originally talked about was, you know, this honest criticism versus snarkiness, and I think that there's kind of a balance beam to walk. But some things are just ludicrous and kind of deserve bashing.
So give me an example.
So the latest IE Get the Facts campaign, what a crock of crap. I mean, it could not have been skewed and less informational for a marketing, you know, thing termed Get the Facts than it was just horrible, and it got raked over by everyone, and I think it eventually started changing. The 10 grand one was another one that we haven't had an opportunity to snark on the show. Maybe we'll get the opportunity now, but you know, if you visited the Find 10 Grand Challenge site in Safari, you would say you're not going to find it using broken old Safari.
Yeah, I've seen some of the screens.
And you know, so when Microsoft does stuff like that, they kind of, you know, bring it on themselves. You know, it's the same way that you want to poke Perez Hilton when he gets popped by some member of the Black Eyed Peas, because, you know, what an idiot. Don't be stupid. But another way, you know, in other cases, we level honest criticism at things like the entity framework, or the fact that, you know, Link to SQL kind of was essentially kind of poo-pooed by Microsoft. But, you know, it's a pretty solid, you know, framework that a lot of people like, and it's still active. But, you know, there's all these posts made about how it was going to be kind of end-of-life. And so we tend to be less snarky about that, but we get a little bit angrier, I guess, when we see good things that get sent out. And then, you know, things like, you know, Microsoft Vine comes out, and no one knows what the hell it's even for.
So I've got a theory on that, Scott, because you guys have all seen the movie Serenity. Do you remember
that?
Great
movie.
Based off the TV show Firefly. And they're talking about the guy that's chasing them from whatever, the Federation, the equivalent of the Empire in this mythology. And the thing that they're most scared about is that he is a true believer. He doesn't have any doubts that he is on the side of right and working for good. And obviously to work as hard as he does, and he has to believe that. And I really believe that the people I know at Microsoft really believe in what they're doing. And that gives them a lot of energy and motivation to work very hard and build a lot of great things. But it also leads to a bubble phenomenon where they go off and create things without talking to us, like the Entity Framework, and then come back, or MS Test, and they just create these things that they think are just fantastic, but they've created it in this vacuum inside of this bubble and not really paid attention to real-world development. You know, and I think it's great if they take a week and build a real-world app. But that is just not the same thing, because at the MVP summit, I found Scott Guthrie to tell him to fix the damn add reference dialog. I said, I know it seems simple, I know it's just something on your list, but I spend 10 hours a day in front of this tool, and that dialog pisses me off every single day. Fix it. So you can't even, I mean, I know, Andrew, you're building this real world app, and developer evangelists are actually much more engaged in the real world software development, I think, outside of the Microsoft bubble. I mean, there's real development going on there, but it's not quite the same experience. But I really think that sometimes I get frustrated and I overemphasize what I'm saying and use hyperbole to try to get some attention from people to say, this is BS. You know, that DSLs have such a small niche market that stop wasting your energy. Just because John Box has got himself whipped into a froth somewhere about DSLs doesn't mean it's going to play anywhere, because out here in Knoxville, the Fortune 100 companies are writing everything in ASP Classic.
I think it's unfortunate that the people that are actually engaging the community, like DEs and Scott Hanselman and Rob Connery and Phil Hack and other people, tend to get kicked in the groin the most for bad decisions that their coworkers make, or, you know, their upper management. So they have to come and say in their best little, you know, kind of corporate, not throwing my coworker under the bus voice, you know, keeping everything in house, you know, well, you know, decisions were made, and that's, you know, that's what we have to do. And here's the reason that they decided that, you know, it was too late in the cycle to change it. And, you know, and they know it's BS, and we know it's BS, but, you know, so, but you can't just, you know that, you know, like Damien Gard, who worked on Link to SQL, he's not the one making the decision to make the post to say that, you know, Link to SQL is not going to be in the net, you know, it's not going to be developed anymore, when he knows that it is, because he's working on it. So,
well, but, okay, but in you know, in fairness, I mean, some of the decisions that get made have to do with constraints, you know, and Microsoft is just like anybody else in the sense that, you know, we don't have either unlimited time or unlimited budgets, and sometimes we have to make decisions between one set of technologies and the next, and you know, and I think one of the things that's both great and creative within the company, but can also be a pain in the butt for people outside the company, is that we do have different groups of people who are all, in my opinion, probably a heck of a lot smarter than me, writing really cool stuff. But the downside of that is that we create confusion for our customers because we end up with five or six different ways of doing things. Now, I had a conversation with some folks at Mix about this very topic of, you know, sort of we had a world before .NET where we had, you know, 15 gajillion different ways of getting at data, right? You had ADO, you had RDO, you had DAO, you had ODBC. Who the heck could figure out how you were supposed to get the data? And one of the things that was awesome when .NET came out is that there was one basic API, right? ADO.NET was the way to get at data. And then we started coming out with newer and cooler and different ways of getting at data again. And you know, Link was one of them, Link to SQL, et cetera. And it's great to have new options, but at the same time, the more options we put out there, the more that there's that potential for confusion, and the learning curve gets steeper, you know. And I think that there's a desire at some level to say, okay, so we kind of need to have a canonical way of doing this, or, you know, the best way that we recommend. And, you know, I'm not going to say, you know, and again, you're absolutely right. I'm not going to throw somebody under the bus or say that somebody's decision sucked. That's not my job to do. But I think that, you know, bottom line is whether we made the right call or not to emphasize one, you know, data access technology over another, you know, I think that there are, you know, I think there are good reasons for trying to give guidance as to what the, you know, what the kind of best technology is moving forward. I don't necessarily expect that people are going to agree with that decision, right? Not everybody's going to agree with that.
Again, I think that you have, I think you have a different perspective, and I think it's valuable. I mean, I think what you're doing is a valuable service, but I also think that VS 2010 having a WPF editor had nothing to do with customer demands. Certainly no customers that I know or work with. The biggest problem with Visual Studio 2008 is performance. It's a hog. It's bloated. It loads everything in memory. It is just, it's way too greedy. And
but it's better than 2005 and 2003 and .NET.
No, because I worked in Visual Studio 2003 for 6 months last year, and the performance was absolutely mind-boggling. It just worked. It was like using Vi, man. You wanted to edit a document, right-click, open it in Visual Studio, and bang, that sucker was up and running. If I accidentally double-click an XML document and Visual Studio comes open, I has to open up, I groan. All right, this is a big problem, and I don't need a frickin' WPF editor. You know, I don't care if it's animated in 3D and the comments are little balloons that is totally irrelevant. And it's a further indication of detachment and isolation. And if I complain, my friend Josh Holmes once introduced me to a Microsoft GM as our squeaky wheel. And if I'm a squeaky wheel and I squeak, it's because I care and I want the product to be great because I have to use it every day.
So I totally want you to be the squeaky wheel. And I'll also, let me say, when I was in my life before Microsoft, I got the opportunity to go to design reviews and be that squeaky wheel too. You know, one of my pet peeves before, you know, back in the day was the fact that if you switched from design view into source view and back again in the HTML editor in older versions of Visual Studio, it would change the formatting of your code. Drove me up a wall. And for several, I mean, it was probably, probably two generations of Visual Studio, we kept hearing the same promise of, yeah, we've got it, we think we've got it licked this time. And it was better, but it still did it. And it drove people absolutely batty. You know, when we finally, after, I guess I joined Microsoft in, I think, 2004, and 2005 came out, and it really actually did fix it finally. And I just about danced a jig because it meant I could go out and do presentations and say, we really, 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 really fixed it this time. You know, but all of that came about because at those design reviews where a bunch of people were sitting down with the ASP.NET team, it was one of those, you know, top things that everybody said, you absolutely have to fix this, because if you don't, our heads will explode. One of the things that's challenging is where you're getting your feedback. And I think that one of the things that's great about communication channels like Twitter, for example, is that it can be easier to get a wider variety of people that you hear from. You know, you can only bring so many people to Redmond for a software design review, right? Whereas I think that the community connections that are being made with Twitter, with Facebook, with, you know, all kinds of things that are happening these days is, you know, I think definitely a good thing for Microsoft and for the community.
So Alan, with the WPF editor, it looks odd to us because, yeah, I don't really care if the, you know, if the select text is now this gradient in the editor. But I don't think we were the customers for that particular feature. I think that is aimed directly at DevExpress, RSharper, or ReSharper, with the Tomato, is it Tomato IDE? Something like that. All the third-party people that are trying to build add-ins on top of that. And the fact that they brought along WPF at the same time they brought in the Managed Extensibility Framework means, you know, that suddenly writing these add-ins becomes attainable for us mere mortals and mouth breathers who don't live in calm anymore. Yeah, thank God. Hallelujah.
But I don't want to extend Visual Studio. I want to actually use the damn thing to write software that solves problems and adds value out here in the business world beyond Microsoft's borders. And I think I am the customer. I'm actually a DevExpress and ReSharper customer too. So, I mean, in a sense, I get some value out of that. But frankly, I've given this feedback. I've said in sessions with teams and still not seen that. I still don't buy it. I hate to sound like some conspiracy-minded, paranoid freak, but I just don't buy it.
I think that, you know, Visual Studio is still running on inner dev technology based on late 90s, you know, and so it's something where eventually you've got to move forward. And I think, too, we're looking at early betas of Visual Studio 2010, and there's still optimization both in the Visual Studio code and the WPF code, and that's only good for everybody because it's Microsoft has to start dogfooding WPF in a serious way in order to actually get some, you know, to make it usable, make it adopted, make all those kind of things. So I think that it's not just about spinny cubes and gradients. I think it.
Did you just lick Andrew's boots?
I think it's a good thing going forward. It depends on what you want to do, but I mean, I think that it's.
All right, so I think the you know, to follow on my earlier answer, you know, I think that the challenge is that when we don't do things like do our own products using later technologies like WPF, we get whacked because, well, you know, why isn't Microsoft writing anything in .NET? Why is everything still in C++? You know, and I think that it's fine to ask that question, but I think that suggesting that we shouldn't move our UI technology forward for Visual Studio, I don't see that. I think that there are a lot more advantages to modernizing the shell of Visual Studio that may not have immediate benefits for you specifically, Alan, but I think that in the long term, they're going to pay off as an investment. In the short term, in the beta, yeah, you bet. Right now, it's not performance optimized, and you know, from everything I've gathered from the team, that work, you know, that's still work that has to be done. And I'm
Are you suggesting that Visual Studio 2005 and 2008 were performance optimized? I don't have any hope that 2010 is going to offer any better performance than 2005 or 2008 because it's not a priority. The priority is to load every freaking thing under the sun into memory, eat up all my resources, take forever to start up, take forever to load, to shut down. To me, those are very significant issues, and I voiced them, and it just doesn't seem to be heard. So to me, honestly, it looks like just spinning wheels and gradients. I don't have any faith. Once again, I love Microsoft and I love Visual Studio. I work in it every day, but when something's wrong, I'm going to point it out, and this just is wrong to me.
Well, and I think that, I mean, I think that that's an absolutely fair criticism, right? If you don't feel that the priorities are being set correctly, then yeah, by all means, level that criticism and share that feedback with the teams. You know, it's fair to level the criticism. I guess what I'd say is that, you know, again, there are multiple priorities going on here, right? I agree with you. I think the performance should be a high priority, but there are trade-offs that are going to be made in terms of moving forward with some technologies, and I think, you know, I think that you're absolutely right to try and keep us honest and, you know, and pummel where pummeling is appropriate. But I think there also has to be a recognition that there are many, many masters that have to be served by this particular tool. I don't know that we're going to be able to keep everybody happy.
So I think Alan brought up an interesting word there, faith. So there's a lot of us that have been working with Microsoft a lot longer than some of the newer employees and some of the newer devs. So I've been working with Microsoft technology since DOS 3. I personally believe with all my heart that the last stable OS that Microsoft put out was DOS 5.0. I know Kevin's probably been working with it for a lot longer. So you know, I've lived through the Dr. DOS debacle. I was there when Stack had to sue. I was there when my OS 3 warp and OS 2.1 Windows stopped working with the Windows for Workgroup update. Just happened to break this particular OS that I was using. I've you know, and through IE, the rise of IE and the crushing of Netscape and the lamentation of its women and driving and, you know, all other browsers before them. The Halloween memos, the just, you know, all the crap that Microsoft has done over the years. And, you know, so it's hard for me to feel sorry for a multi-billion-dollar company if they're getting their little feelings hurt by some criticisms of their crappy little products sometimes. And to be honest, I feel the same about Google. I'm not going to shed any tears if some, you know, Google engineer is sad because I think Wave is kind of silly. But I think that a lot of that, you know, that when Alan says he doesn't have any faith that Visual Studio is going to be better for him with WPF, I think it's because we realize that Microsoft does not always have our best interests at heart. I think Windows ME was a pretty good example of not having our best interests at heart. I think the fact that Vista was sold, Longhorn was sold with the three pillars of Longhorn and was going to change our lives and make us all grow hair back. Except maybe for K. Scott, who has absolutely no need to grow any hair because he has a fabulous head of hair. Then suddenly our expectations had to be reined back in because Vista wasn't going to be the second coming, or even, you know, the third or fourth, even.
But it is the seventh coming.
And now
that's
we're told
to wait for.
And now we're told that Windows 7 is going to be, you know, everything we need, and that's you know, kind of the usual marketing spiel, you know. Microsoft is the only company that I've ever seen that consistently Osborne's themselves. And if you don't get that reference, look it up, you kids, and get off my lawn. They're always promising that, you know, as soon as they release something, well, the next version, we'll get it right next time. And so, yeah, a lot of us don't have faith that Microsoft is going to deliver on their promises.
So what you're suggesting is we need a good lesson in under-promise and over-deliver?
That would be great. Well, I think that in a lot of ways .NET did that, with, you know, the exception that, you know, the initial validator controls treated all non-IE browsers as the slow kids at the back of the bus. But it did, you know, it gave us a reasonable alternative to Java, which was, you know, write once, debug everywhere. Now we just write once, debug on Windows, which is good. It's, you know, certainly has driven a lot of features in Java, that's for sure, which is good. Competition is great.
Well, when you talk about the under-promise and over-deliver, though, I mean, I feel like Windows 7 is a great example of what I'd like to see from Microsoft. They actually fixed a lot of things and had some good innovations. Windows 7 is the only Windows OS I run now. I've got a server in the basement, but all my clients are Windows 7 because I think it's fantastic. And I would love to see, I mean, I'm running Windows 7 on an Athlon XP 3000 and it runs great, better than XP did. That's what I want to see in Visual studio. That's what I want to see in other products, is that kind of over-delivering. I mean, I want to be impressed, and I'm impressed with Windows 7.
So one of the things that I think we kind of touched on a little bit as we started this, but we've kind of gotten off into more of a product discussion, but given what I do day in, day out with the community, I'm kind of interested to hear feedback from you all in terms of what are we doing right and or what are we doing wrong in terms of how we communicate to developers, sort of our vision of how how you work with our tools. I mean, I know, Alan loves to beat up on me about drag and drop development, and I'll be the first to say, I've done my fair share of drag and drop demos, and some of the code that I write, I do use some of the drag and drop tools, and I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Will you please promise here and now never to do that again?
No, I won't, actually.
No, never again.
You know what? So here's my take on the whole drag and drop thing. I really, one of the things that I enjoy in terms of the discussions of software craftsmanship is the concept of technical debt, right? And drag and drop is a good example of something that can lead to technical debt. And I'm perfectly willing to accept some of that technical debt. And sometimes the reality is that I pay for it later.
No, I pay for it later. No, you go on and do a demo of something else that'll be released next year. And I'm come and clean up behind these poor slobs that all they know about .NET development is what you showed them in the PowerPoint deck and the drag and drop demo. And they don't have a clue what's going on. And so it's just garbage. I walk into these steaming piles of poo that are called business applications and have to clean this mess up. And you just aren't doing anybody any good by making them ignorant.
So what you're saying is, Alan, that you're upset that Microsoft's providing you a job.
I would say that there are other skills that my clients and employers could exploit.
All right, so let me give you my take on this. Because this is definitely some place where I think you and I disagree pretty vehemently.
Yeah, you're wrong.
Well, I'm used to that. So my take on drag and drop is that I think if we're out there doing demos of any rapid application development feature that has the potential for accruing technical debt, that we probably ought to be saying that. I'll give you an example of, sort of fitting in that idea that I talked about building actual apps that people are going to use and sort of using that as a teaching tool. A couple of other developer evangelists and myself had the opportunity to build an application in Silverlight for TechEd, a little mapping application to help people who are attending find local events and user groups in their area. None of us had real deep experience with Silverlight when we started. I'm sure we made a ton of mistakes, and one of the things that I did was that as we developed this application, I kept, kind of mental notes of, okay, what did we kind of bork on this, and what could we have done better, what kinds of things did we ran into that kind of bit us in the butt, and started doing a presentation built around those ideas, which isn't to say that, that's not, a pure example of drag and drop, but it's an example of, okay, so this is some stuff that didn't work really well as we were moving from, more of an ASP.NET server-side model to this technology that we were unfamiliar with. So here are these things that you can be aware of as you're moving there. And I think that combined with, the standard demos, combining that with some of the hands-on experience and saying, hey, this technology is really cool, but if you don't understand what you're getting into when you move from, say, a synchronous server based, when you call web services synchronously, on the server side versus calling web services asynchronously in a Silverlight application, it's a night and day difference, right? People who aren't familiar with that model can easily shoot themselves in the foot, and I know because I've done it. So I think that you're right that if all that we're teaching people is how to spin the knobs and drag things from one place to another, we're not teaching them enough. But at the same time, I think that we do have an obligation as the people who are familiar, who are in theory at least most familiar with these tools as they're new, to show off those features. I'd love to see us do a better job of giving the caveats and the, you know, letting people know that, okay, this application that I'm demoing isn't built based on any patterns. So it's, you know, it's demo code. You don't want to necessarily emulate this. And, you know, one of the guys who's local to me, Pete Brown, great deep expert on Silverlight, does a Silverlight 3 presentation where he very specifically says, you know, as I'm building this, keep in mind that this is demo code. Ideally, when you're moving into an application, I'll show you a pattern that you can use. But right now, this code is really specifically to demonstrate this feature, and I don't want to clutter it up with the conversation of the pattern yet. And eventually, he gets to talking about MVVM and, you know, the ability to kind of separate out those concerns that way.
Oh, you mean presentation model, right?
I'm determined. I'm bound and determined that if we're not going to call it model view view model, we should just call it Fred. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it.
Call it monkey until you can think of a better name. Exactly. All right, I think that caveats of here be dragons are fantastic. I just haven't seen them yet, you know, at a launch event or anything like that, because it seems like there's a fear of criticizing the product, that it's not super easy to use. And so if you're doing that and there's a trend to see more of that in the canned presentations, I'm 100% for that, because I think that's what people need to get in their heads, is that this is not a model of how you should do real world development. I'm trying to show you features. The other aspect of the whole drag and drop demo thing that gets under my skin is I didn't write a single line of code. Now, I've had to deal with plenty of code bases where people reinvented the wheel and they didn't know the framework and that kind of thing. So I'm all for writing as little code as possible, but what the hell is wrong with writing code? I love writing code. Should dragging something from the toolbox be a better experience than actually writing it in the editor?
Well, I'll give you a great example of why of one place where that's absolutely the case. I don't ever want to have to write a login dialogue in my life. I never want to have to write that code. So the fact that when we brought out ASP.NET 2.0 and Visual Studio 2005, that you could just drag a login control, and if you had the membership service provider set up, you know, you were good to go. That's a big win to me, and I don't see any. Personally, I don't see any downside to that, particularly given that if you decide to change out your membership provider from, you know, the SQL provider to some other provider, you don't have to change anything.
Okay, right? I don't even want to get off into the debate about why the provider is a model is a bad pattern, but simply say I agree with what you're saying. I think the implementation was done in a vacuum, ignoring the rest of the evolution of software development in the previous decade, and I do not believe the provider model is the right way to go about that. I do agree that I don't want to write that plumbing code every time, but I don't mind writing code to reuse a component.
So ultimately, if you have that code someplace that you drag it and drop it into the IDE, are you guilty of drag and drop development too?
Why the hell would I ever do that?
Do you object to controls?
No. Okay, I'm leaving visual designers out of this. I'm talking about all these non-visual components where you create a visual designer for no reason. Why would I drag that code out of somewhere? Why wouldn't I configure my IOC container to inject that component and then just use it in my code? IntelliSense is a wonderful thing. I don't need some graphic on the screen. I don't need to reach for the mouse to add these things into my application.
Well, I think you're getting into sort of a philosophical disagreement, though. There are definitely
No. You're still wrong. That's what's going on.
So what's interesting is I had the chance last week to sit in on a new web technologies meetup group up in Frederick, Maryland, that was very much not the Microsoft world. And what was interesting in having conversations with folks, you know, who are, you know, PHP developers and Java developers and, you know, pretty much anything but .NET, although there are a couple of people who were also .NET developers, was just both what's sort of similar and what's dissimilar about the conversations that we had. You know, one of the parts of the conversation that I found fascinating was one of the guys told a story about a place that he worked where they wrote an add-in for their development environment that would reformat code as it was checked in from what the developer preferred to what the company standard was, and then reformatted it back to their preference when they checked it out, because everybody on the development team had different preferences for where the curly braces lined up, and they didn't want to deal with it. So, you know, I think that trying to kind of make a one-size-fits-all statement about how development should be done, I don't see that working in our industry, because I think there are many different ways that you can successfully build software, and I think that there's room for more than one right way.
Well, then let me just leave it at this, because I know some of the other guys have some comments they want to make. I've never seen it work. I've never seen it work in a long-term, maintainable sense, only in the initial release. And honestly, the initial release is not where the cost of any application lies. It's always down the line in extending and maintaining the application. And I just feel like the whole rad philosophy that's built into that drag-and-drop development, and just the whole damn toolbox. I want the toolbox and the Visual Designer and ASP.NET out of Visual Studio. I want to unload those packages. I don't ever want to see them, because they completely contradict my aesthetic of software development.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the key point that I want to emphasize is that, I mean, to me, the RAD stuff is sort of a sham. It's a sales tool. It's a look how fast it is to get your application up and running. But for long-term sustainable work, I just don't see it working. In fact, I never use it in my work. And I would also like to be able to disable the design mode of the web editor. It has never worked for me in any real application. And you know, whenever I hear Microsoft say, well, you know, we have constraints, we have resource constraints, and so we have to make judgment calls. Well, when tons of effort is poured into those things from which I glean no value and not put into places where I would gain a lot of value, I get very frustrated. The resources are not being applied to the things that I'm interested in them being applied to.
And then you get snarky.
And then you get snarky. I try to lead the snark to the master, Mr. Kuhn, there.
It's not that drag and drop is bad, because my ultimate goal in software development is the Star Trek experience. I want to walk onto the holodeck and say, computer, generate me London, England, late 1800s, and provide me with, you know, the yada, 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 and, you know, or write me a program that will interpolate the gross national product of Bolivia with the number of hairs on the back of my hand, you know, and just have it do it. It's that the code that gets generated by that simple drag and drop is often of poor quality, and it's difficult to maintain and extend. The example that I usually use is the update panel, actually web forms entirely. Provided that you walk the primrose path that ASP.NET and the update panel is designed for, you know, you're golden. You're great. If you need to stray off of that path and make your own modifications, then the framework repeatedly pokes you in the eye and, you know, calls your kids names and picks on your mother. And so it's the pain threshold goes up, you know, greatly. A great example of this is dynamically generating controls in the early versions. As soon as you started to, you know, create your own control at some point during the page lifecycle, you suddenly became its guardian for life. You had to control every aspect.
So I do see one positive trend, which is we're getting more control over the generated code. And I think that, you know, giving T4 templates, using that kind of stuff, is helpful, at least in terms of, okay, if you're going to generate code for me, give me some say in the matter. One place that we haven't had that kind of say is generated JavaScript, like update panel, that kind of thing. I just want to repeat what Kevin was saying, you know, that as soon as you start bringing resourcing into the matter, it's normally you can say all you want, you know, okay, fine, we've got limited resources and we all understand that. But then that does invite your customers to start saying, well, then what's this about? Why are you doing this weird project? Or why are you spending all this time on this stupid thing that I think is dumb? So as soon as the resourcing thing does come up, then you're inviting people to criticize your resourcing.
And I think that that's perfectly fair. And I think that, you know, again, I think that it's fair to criticize, you know, which features get emphasized and which, you know, which features don't. But I think that ultimately it's really going to be tough to keep everybody happy. And that kills me because, you know, ultimately as a developer evangelist, my job is to make, or at least to help developers be happy, right? I want developers to be happy with Microsoft. So it's frustrating when I can't make that happen for everybody. To get back to the generated code issue, I think that, you know, I've certainly experienced the pain of tripping over something where the framework has gotten in my way. I don't think that there's anybody who's done extensive development with ASP.NET who hasn't at some point tripped over something that's, you know, that's kind of gotten in their way or bit them when they, you know, were trying to do something, you know, custom with a control that the framework didn't want to let them do. But I think what's important to remember is that the problem that Web Forms was designed to solve, this was almost 10 years ago now that we're talking about that this model was created. And, you know, back in the day, you know, I mentioned on the chat that I actually wrote a book on visual interdev. And I remember back in the interdev days that we had these design time controls that were literally hundreds and hundreds of lines of script code. And they had some of the same ideas as the controls in web forms. That is, you know, the idea of trying to help desktop developers be able to do web development, which is something that most of them really weren't familiar with. And, it, you know, back in that day, the web was not a model that as many developers understood as well as they do today. So I think the need for some kind of an abstraction was pretty important when Web Forms was created. But if you look now at the options that are becoming available with the release of ASP.NET MVC, with the inclusion of jQuery in the box with ASP.NET MVC, you know, there are a lot more options for you to take greater control over your development and your code while still using ASP.NET. And I think that that's an important thing to emphasize, because I think a lot of people kind of get wrapped around the axle of, well, is MVC, you know, kind of the new way forward, and is web forms going away? And, you know, I don't see it that way. I see it as developers having better options, so that somebody like Alan, who really wants to, you know, really wants to have that deep control over the code that's written and the code that's generated, if any, has that option now. Whereas, you know, somebody like myself, who's got, you know, long experience with web forms and, you know, pretty deep familiarity with that model, maybe I'm still more comfortable doing my development that way. But, you know, certainly I like having the option as well. There may be times when I want to have, you know, kind of that clean code and the routing ability and all of that. And a lot of those are things that you can mix and match. So
do we have anything else?
Surely somebody can beat me up about something else.
No, the beating that Dustin and what was his name? I can't remember his name. Took at the MVP summit over that ad reference dialogue. Oh man, if you say you're a PM on the IDE, you just need to wear a cup, because you're gonna get about that dialogue, and that thing has sucked since, God, what, I don't know. Visual Studio 5.
I was poking around in the Dev Express extensions because I don't remember what their wrapper is for Visual Studio, but DX Core, that's it. There's a DX Core extension called Quick Add Reference that just throws up a form and lets you add a file reference to a DLL or what have you.
Yeah, ReSharper has that too.
Oh yeah, with ReSharper it just does it for me and I don't have to see it. Did you mean to add a reference to this? Why, yes, I did.
So, do you think that would be better if we added Clippy in there somewhere?
I think the Clippy mindset is the core of the issue that galls me. And that makes me sometimes embarrassed around my cool Ruby friends, you know, the black t-shirt and spiky hair crowd. You know, it's like, yeah, I develop on the Microsoft platform. I know they have Clippy and we have wizards. Yeah, but I deal with it because I think C# is an amazing language. I think the .NET framework is an amazing library, and I really like working with it.
And I think the Mono team is doing amazing things with it.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, how about Andrew showing that rep loop at PDC that's been in Mono? I don't remember when it came out, but it's already released in Mono.
Well, they have the opportunity to, you know, develop for themselves, which gives them some leeway.
They have more resources than Microsoft to spread around, apparently.
They have Miguel de Icaza.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think we've kind of beat it to the ground here.
Yeah, I think everything I wanted to say is off my chest.
I mean, there's always going to be the ditch between the super cheerleaders and, you know, the, or as I like to call them, Silverlight developers. Oh, wait, did I say that?
Hey, I resemble that remark.
And the people who are taking a more realistic approach. I'm not going to use the P word because that's been overused.
So I think that a lot of the time, like, for instance, Silverlight, I get excited about Silverlight. I'm also excited about HTML5. I'm excited about Mono. I'm excited about a lot of different things outside of the Microsoft world. I think that it's easy to just kind of stereotype and look at, okay, like, I so-and-so planted their flag in the Mono world or in the Silverlight world or the whatever. And I think, you know, I'm excited about Silverlight. I'm excited about jQuery. I'm excited about whatever makes my job better. And right now, I think that the browser world being where it is, there's definitely a place for things like Flash and Silverlight. That may change over time, or Silverlight may continue to add features that go beyond what browsers support, either in terms of what they'll render or the development time. But I think that, you know, a lot of the time that it's easy to see that kind of like cheerleader thing, but really it's just like, hey, I'm excited about what I can do. Then there's other people that are going to say, you know, rah, rah, rah for whatever's in the latest press release. But I think that it's hard to kind of sort that out where it's coming from.
So let's tie this back a little bit to this notion of, you know, best practices and whether or not part of Microsoft's job is to sort of propagate good practices in the development industry and develop tools that encourage people to use best practices, as opposed to, as Andrew put it, you know, putting out tools that from the moment you start using them start accruing technical debt. So I'm curious as to, you know, at least from the Microsoft perspective, Andrew, like, does Microsoft see itself taking on that role more as time's going forward here? Is it something that might open up to?
So, from my perspective, and again, you know, I can speak as a developer evangelist in the field, right? I live in Virginia. I work, you know, on the East Coast. I don't spend all my days in Redmond, so I won't pretend to speak for, you know, the vast hordes of developers and PMs and other folks who work there. What I will say is that we certainly have conversations within my team about how we can better approach those very issues. You know, so when we get, you know, beat up or, you know, or nicely corrected by people like Alan who tell us we're wrong, and we are sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, you know, we do take that feedback seriously. You know, I think Scott mentioned the, you know, the IE8 stuff. That's definitely stuff that we talk about, and, you know, it's not just, ooh, you know, how do we deflect this criticism? It's how do we share what we think is valid about the criticism that we're receiving with the appropriate people internally? How do we be a better conduit for our customers to the appropriate development teams and, you know, and the marketing teams, and really try and make sure that the right people are hearing that feedback? I think that that feedback loop is an important part of the role, but I also think that, you know, part of the feedback that we need is, okay, you know, what are we doing well and what aren't we doing well from, you know, from a field perspective. I also, you know, I mean, you know, we've had this the patterns and practices group at Microsoft for years, and we have, you know, people involved in that who are both within Microsoft, but also people who are, you know, from within the developer community. So, for example, one of the local folks that I work with here in Mid-Atlantic, Brian Noyes, I'm sure all of you probably know who Brian is. You know, Brian worked extensively, for example, on the Prism documentation that Patterns and Practices team released fairly recently for, you know, for Silverlight and WPF. You know, I certainly think that we have for a long time and continue to make an effort to reach out to the community and try to both talk about what those best practices are and also publish those best practices as best we can. You know, I think that if you look at something like the release of MVC for ASP.NET, yeah, I think that that's a great example of, you know, the development teams working on those products, hearing the feedback that, hey, you know, web forms gets in my way. I need something better. I need another option. You know, so I think that there are definitely places where I think Microsoft has done a pretty good job of both hearing the feedback and acting on it. Obviously, there are places where we've fallen short on that. And I think that that probably pains a lot of us, and you know, I think even more so than just, you know, Scott's note about needing to wear our cup because we're getting, you know, kicked where it hurts. You know, I'd rather take the beating occasionally and be able to share that feedback with you know, hopefully the right people and get it heard than not hear the feedback in the first place. So I would certainly hope that, you know, that my comments about snarkiness notwithstanding, you know, I never don't want to hear the feedback, because there's nothing worse from my standpoint than just being ignored. You know, if you're being ignored, you're definitely doing something terribly wrong.
So, you guys have something you want to plug?
You go ahead, Alan.
Well, first, I just want to thank Andrew for coming on, because I think it's a good demonstration of how open Andrew is to receiving criticism that he, you know, came on this podcast and took our abuse and our jokes, and I think because he's so approachable, it makes it very fun to have these kind of exchanges with him. But this week, while we're recording, this weekend is the CodeStock conference in Knoxville, which will have 350 people attending at codestock.org. You can check it out. By the time this comes out, probably that will have passed. So I want to also mention the DevLink conference in Nashville, which is August 13th through 15th. It'll be 3 days this year. I've been speaking and participating in this conference since 2006, when the first one was held, and it's just an amazing event. It is a real full-scale conference at a very low price, and I'll be running Open Spaces there. So if you want to get a flavor for Open Spaces, come out and check it out there, and I'll indoctrinate you.
And I've seen Alan run Open Spaces, and it's quite a lot of fun. So it's my turn?
Yep.
Okay.
Fire away.
So one thing that I'd love for folks to check out is the application that I mentioned, Community Megaphone. You can find that at communitymegaphone.com, all one word. And basically, it's an engine for promoting and discovering developer and IT pro community events. Got mapping built into it. I've got an API for folks who might be interested in integrating it into their own websites. I've also got an embeddable web gadget. You can just embed an iframe and share filterable events particular to your area or your specific user group or whatever type of events you might want to show off to your website visitors. And so I definitely encourage folks to take a look at that. I'd also like to plug my blog, which is blogs.msdn.com/gduthie. That's G-D-U-T-H-I-E. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter as devhammer, D-E-V-H-A-M-M-E-R.
Okay, I think that's about it for this episode of Herding Code. I want to thank Andrew and Alan for coming on and duking it out for us. We really appreciate it, guys. And hope you'll join us again next week. Okay.
Oh, yeah,
oh,
baby.
Yes.
It's been a while.
Yes. Uh-oh, it's no longer my birthday then.
Well, it is in California, so happy birthday.
There you go. Thank you.